Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and today I'm speaking with someone who is very, very special to me. Her name is Chantal, and even though she said that I'd be able to pronounce her last name, I'm pretty sure I won't be able to. So I'm going to let her introduce her whole name, and she's going to sing it, and it's going to be absolutely beautiful. I first met Chantal when I was working in Europe. She lives in Germany, and she has quite a story to tell us today, and I'm so excited to hear it. So Chantal, thank you so much for making the effort to be on our podcast. I'm so excited.
Hi, Carla.
Hi. Hey, so Chantal, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Chantal Müller-Mucamorera. I don't need to sing it because I can do it. I just wanted to help you to learn it by singing it, but I can't pronounce my name. So Müller-Mucamorera. I'm 50 years old. And nearly 51, married to a wonderful husband, Henning Müller, a German. And I have two wonderful sons, Samuel and Dominic, 19 and 17. And then the dog, Rose.
And the dog is the most important part, right?
He's part of the family.
Now, Chantal, I'm sure we're going to get into this, but you don't sound like you have a German accent to me.
Yes, right. So I was born in Burundi. I'm a Rwandan citizen, and I came to Germany when I was 6 years old with my mom.
Well, this is already interesting. So let's just jump in. So tell us more about growing up in Rwanda and moving to Germany, and then let's just get started. Let's hear your story.
Okay. My mom met a German in Rwanda, and so when I was 6 years old, we moved to Germany. And before that time, I was born in Burundi, and then I was living a short time in Zaire, so Republic of Congo today. And then when we came back to Rwanda, where my grandma lived and all the family, so my mom was in Burundi and Zaire as a refugee in that time. So when my mom came back to Rwanda, she met my stepfather, a German, and with him she moved to Germany and took me as her oldest child with her, while my younger brother stayed with my grandma, but they came later in the 80s also to Germany. Yeah, I went to school in Germany, in the northern part of Germany. I was in a Catholic school because my stepfather was a very strong believing Catholic, and it was very important for him that we get baptized as Catholics. So when he married my mom, so my siblings and I were baptized as Catholic. And in Germany, I went to a Catholic primary school.
What was that like to go to Catholic primary school?
It was good. So I felt comfortable. I grew up as a believing person. So through my mom, she, even when we were not baptized as children, she was a strong believing woman. She, as a young woman, she was a scout girl. So with the Catholic nuns, and she learned many songs, faith promoting songs, and she learned the Bible, and so she taught me all the songs and told me stories about God and to be honest and things like that. So I felt comfortable in that school. So every morning before we would start the class, we would pray, And once a month, there was a sermon with all the school. So I liked it.
And how long did you go to that school?
So it's just from the first to the fourth class. And then,
I was just going to say, so you graduated from there?
It's just primary.
Oh, you graduated from primary there, from there. Got it. So you went to like what we would probably call sixth grade or something like that. And then where did you go to school after that?
So in Germany, in my time, we had 4 years, the first 4 years. And then we had 2 years of orientation to decide where to go next. And then I was, after these 2 years, I went to a Realschule, so how you call it in Germany. That was, I graduated after the 10th class.
And so by this point, your German was very, very good, I'm guessing.
So when, yeah, at the end it was good, but at the beginning I didn't speak any German. I thought I would never learn it when I heard my father speak and very fast. I thought I would never learn it. But well, as a child, you learn because children are very true. They say, oh, look, that's not right. And so they corrected me. And I was very, I had a lot of friends and was much in sports. And so I learned very quickly.
Okay, so you went to Catholic primary school and then you decided what, you spent the 2 years of orientation deciding what you wanted to do. What happened after that?
So then I went to Realschule. This is another school. And then I graduated there after the 10th class.
And then what happened?
After that, so... That's a long story. I wanted to do something with languages, and there was a school I wanted to go to, but it was a translation school. So in that time, I really liked languages, but this school was a business translation school. And I went there, but they didn't put me in the class I wanted because there were too much people. And so they put me in another class I didn't want to. So I decided, if I don't go to this class, I leave the school. And also was interested in doing something in the social area. So during my ninth grade, I had the possibility to internship, and I was in a place with handicapped people, and I liked it, and I thought maybe I would work with handicapped people. And so when I didn't get the school I wanted, I went back to this place and asked if I could do a 1 year internship, because in the ninth grade it was just 3 weeks just for orientation if it is something for me. And so I could do that for 1 year, and the plan was to school after that to get to work with handicapped people, so Heilpädagogik. I wanted to do something like that. But Germany is very much in bureaucracy. And when the time I informed myself about which steps to do, I went these steps, but meanwhile, they changed, you know? And so I did the steps I was informed in the ninth grade to go to the school, like some... a special school for social pedagogic. And then they told me, well, now you need to have a 1 year school before you get to our school, another year of school. And then I did that school. And when I finished that, they told me, now you need to do a 1 year internship again, because it was not the right order. I said, no. That's enough. I don't do that again. So, and that was the reason I orientated my journey in another way, because I didn't want to lose another year because of the order of the bureaucracy, German bureaucracy. And so I thought, what can I do else? What do I like? And I thought, I love to travel. Maybe I could do something with traveling. And so I started a trainee in a travel agency. Yeah, and during that time, I met the LDS Mormons.
And how old were you at this point in your life when you started the travel agency?
I was, wait, let's see, I think I was 18. No, I was 18.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, you were so young still.
You think so? At that time. Yeah. So, yeah, when I met the missionaries, so that was a time. So I had my own apartment at that time, and I started thinking about the purpose of life. And I had a pamphlet in my home from the Jehovah Witnesses, and they knocked door to door and left this pamphlet. And then I started to read it, and that made me thinking that, well, I used to pray when I need something, but when I'm okay, I don't pray. And this pamphlet, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses are very much into the second coming of Christ and so forth. And it made me thinking like, well, I grew up with the faith that for sure Christ would come one day. But I don't think about it very much. And so it made me thinking, so what is if Jesus Christ would come back now? Would you say like, hi, I belong to you, but you don't care just when you need something? And so that made me a little bit reflecting over myself and thinking it's not very fair the faith behave I have. So. And I decided for myself to pray more, not only when I need something. And I thought maybe it would be helpful to have the community to share this faith. And I thought about my own faith, so in the Catholic Church. And I didn't go very often after I left my home. I just went to church from time to time when there was a youth mass, because it was with the band and music was a little bit more modern. I didn't really like, and I didn't really like the liturgy, but it was not so my thing. And so I love the modern mass with the band, but it was just once a month. But I was not really in that group, because I went just from time to time. And so I thought, and I was missing the friendship in the church anyway. So there was no real friendship, because I left the group for years before, because I was living in a house with youth when I was 14. Which were not very believing, but I was the only one who was going to church from time to time. This is a part of my life. So because of my stepfather, he was a very strong believing Catholic, and he was very, how to say, so he didn't allow me to do a lot of things. And he was too, today I would say he was very jealous. And one day I left my home by the help of the youth government. So it was really okay. So it was a tough time in my house. So I could leave my house. He was very so violent. So yeah. So violence and it was a very tough time. So I left my home when I was 14 and lived in this youth house. And that was the best time after my tough time with my stepfather. So.
Oh my goodness, you left your house at 14. That's, well, no wonder you said that 18 wasn't that young. Because when you've been on your own for 4 years, I bet it didn't really feel that young at all. That's incredible, Chantal.
Okay, yeah. And so that was the reason I didn't have the contact to the Catholic youth anymore, because so these 4 years I was in this youth house, but they were not believing. I went to church from time to time. So to come back to my desire to be more close to God, was like, yeah, which community would help me to stay close and to practice more faith and not only praying and in need. And that was the point. I thought about a scripture in the Bible which says, who seeketh will find. And I thought, okay, I would like to find a church which pleases God. So you said that who seeketh will find. And I said, God, if there is a church which pleases you most, let me find it. And I promised you to be open. And after this prayer, it was a very strong moment when I prayed this. I could feel the presence of God, and it was there was a connection from my heart, and I thought this is a very important step in my life now, and I was open from that day on. I wanted to find out if God would show me church which pleases him most. And so I went to work, and one day I came back by train from Bremen to Delmenhorst. My office was in Bremen. And I saw these Mormon missionaries with their name tags. And I went into the train, and the train was full that day. It was a Friday, and Friday is when people go home, who come to work in big cities, and the soldiers went home, and so it was so full. And I passed a section where the places were empty, and I thought maybe it's reserved, and I passed that because the train was full and this passage was empty. But people came and it pushed me back, and so I thought, okay, I go into this section. And I went into this section, sat down, and then one elder came into that room as well. And I saw the name tag, and I thought, this is a church guy, because some years before, maybe 1 year, they knocked door to door at my house, two missionaries. And I had a good conversation with them, but was afraid because of sectarian. And I told my parents that I'm meeting some people who talk about Bible. And then my stepfather said, well, who are these people? And then said, are they Jehovah's Witnesses? I didn't know. And then he said, Mormons? I said, that might be because they had a Book of Mormon and wanted to talk. Oh, that was me. I said, no, I just want to talk about the Bible with you. And so he said, oh, be careful. These are sectarians, and they are very dangerous. And so I was a little bit afraid. that year before, and I had a good friend in my school. He was in a free church, and I told him, I said, Uwe, you know the Bible very well, isn't it? And he said, yeah. And I said, and your dad as well? He said, yes. I said, I would like to invite you to my house. There are two missionaries coming to my house, and I don't want to meet with them anymore. And I don't know how to tell them not to come again. Then Uwe said, okay, I can come. And I said, could you bring your dad as well? And he said, yeah, okay. And so they came, and we had this appointment with the missionaries. And they were very happy that I brought two people more to talk. And then they sat, and then we talked. It was a nice conversation. They were very nice. And then they invited us to church. And then Uwe's dad said, well, you have your faith, and Chantal has her faith, and we have our faith. So I don't want you to come again. Just leave her alone. I was a little bit ashamed, but this is what I wanted. And then they said, okay. And that was it. They didn't come again. Yeah. And so now, 1 year later, I'm sitting in this train, and this elder, and I remembered that I was a little bit ashamed that I sent them away, but I thought it's cool that they didn't bother me. Yeah. And then I said, after my prayer, maybe God wants to show me something. I hope he will talk to me. I would like to listen again. But now this time I want to be open. And so, as I thought, please talk to me. He said, well, where are you driving to? It was like, I'm going to Delmenhorst. And it was just 15 minutes to go. I said, and you are a missionary. And he said, how do you know? And then I said, yeah, I met some a year ago and so far. And then he said, oh, are you interested to talk again? I said, yeah. And then I gave my telephone number, and the same evening they called. So I met missionaries. And this time I was open, and I listened very different to the first time. And when they told me the story about Joseph, I was very amazed, because it was something like, he was in the same situation like me. He was searching. So that was something that really got me. And the most important thing is, like, I thought God gave me an answer, because the story of Joseph Smith was something amazing. I mean, he said that after his prayer, that he saw God and Jesus Christ. That really impressed me, because for me, it was like miracles can happen. Yeah, because it was a miracle for me that God answered my prayer in this in this form. It happened. And so even though it was a miracle, it took a time for me to convert. I had a friend in that time. We met them. I met him in the school I went to for the training, and he was also very open to religion, and so we were taught together. And I think it was because of him that I converted that time. So through my job, I had to interrupt the missionary lecture and went to Crete, to Greek. And in that time, I read all the pamphlets about Joseph Smith, what happened. And yeah, that was also very mind-blowing for me, what happened to him. But I also talked to people, like there was a professor from Norwegian professor. He told me things about the Mormons, and that they have death penalty in Utah. And I was like, really? I was an activist in the 80s for Amnesty International against death penalty. That made me think, I was like, I will ask them when I come home. And so when I came home from Crete after this week, the missionaries met my boyfriend and they prepared him to be baptized. So I came home and he said, "Oh, I want to be baptized." What? I thought, if you get baptized, we will do that together. Why do you want to be baptized? And so the thing is with me, they gave us things to read, and I was very busy with work and with hobbies, so I didn't really read the things they gave us and to pray about. And even though I came back with all these questions, I say, "Is it true that you have death penalty in Utah?" And they said, "Yes." I said, "No, this is not okay." And I had a lot of questions also in the Book of Mormon. So the thing that it was so man oriented, so no women, always about it was so male oriented. And so even though I had this question, but my boyfriend wanted to get baptized, and I asked myself, what made him to do this decision? The thing is with the church, what I see today is you need to have the desire to do that. So I thought, I want to find out if it's really true, like the missionary said, that I need to pray about it. And I want to read all this stuff and really ask God about that. And then they have some pamphlets, and I went to work with the Book of Mormon and all the pamphlets and thought, okay, I will read in the train, and anytime I have, I will read. My break, I will read. And so it was a Saturday. I went to work, and this Saturday, it was not my part to work. I didn't need to work every Saturday, but because of my vacation or time, it was not vacation, it was work to go to Crete at that time. I thought it's my part to work that Saturday. There was another training we changed. And so it was not my part. So I went there and she said, "No, you're not supposed to work today." I said, "Okay, no problem. I can go." So I had free time. And the thing is, in the morning I prayed and said to God that that he should give me time to read, because I told him, "I really don't find the time to read, and maybe I'm organizing myself not that well enough. Please help me to find time to read." And now I go to work and don't need to work. And I said, "Oh God, thank you. Now I have time." And I went to the Weser River. It was close to my work, and sat there very far on a bank, very lonely place. And it was a magic day that day. So the rays were in the sea, in the river, and I felt blessed and said, "Oh, thank you, God, that you gave me time. And that it is so beautiful today." And I sat the whole day there, and I had an appointment after my work with a friend. We wanted to do some music together. And he lived close to my working place. And but I sat there the whole day and forgot the time. I was reading and praying, and the pamphlet was the pamphlets I had were with questions and in scriptures and the Bible and in the Book of Mormon. I compared, and from time to time some people came and sat by me, and I talked to them, and there were also answers to my questions. So it was a very magical day. And the things with the pamphlets, you go through the question, and then it says at the end, "What shall you do?" And the answer is, it was in Alma somewhere, it said, "If it is your desire to mourn with the would agree and to help the sick and so forth. What do you have against to be baptized? And this is something I really was into. I love to help people and to listen, and that got me. This scripture got me. And I thought, okay, I want to be baptized as well. This is how it worked. And I really felt the spirit very strong that day. And yeah, and then I went very late to my appointment and told him, hey, I will be baptized tomorrow. And he tried to tell me, well, this is bullshit. And I have an uncle, he's a priest, and he has many women. He had sex with many women. And so my friend came from Cameroon. And yeah, I said, no, anyway, I want to be baptized. If you like, you can come to my baptism as well. And the thing is, the baptism of my boyfriend was the next day. And maybe that was the reason I wanted to find out what happened. And maybe I had the desire to be baptized as well, or I was open to it. And through these experiences, I was ready. And then I called the missionaries and said, hey, listen, I read the whole day and I want to be baptized tomorrow. Yeah. So I had to have in the morning some last lections, and then in the afternoon I was baptized with my boyfriend.
Oh, wow. So Chantal, let me stop you just for a second. What did your family and friends think about you getting baptized into the LDS Church?
Yeah, so my stepfather was not happy at all, of course, because he was very Catholic, and my mom also said, no, don't do that. When I met the missionaries already in that time, she invited a priest to come and to talk to me and to the missionaries, not to be involved with them. But I said, okay, he can come. But he didn't come, yeah? And so she really tried hard to not that I don't go this way with the missionaries. So, but I was old enough, so I just did it. My parents were not there, so I was baptized with my boyfriend. My friends didn't know about it. So when I met a good friend of mine after a month, we didn't see each other because of the work. You know, I worked in Bremen and she worked in Damenhof. So I didn't, through work, anyway, you don't have this connection to your friends anymore when you start working in a different city, so you don't see each other. And I also had a job to my work. I worked in a fitness center because the money was not enough. I had an own apartment, so from the money of the fitness center I could buy food, and so I was very busy, so I didn't have really time with my friends. But once I met a friend of mine I didn't see for months. And she saw me and she said, wow, you look so happy. What happened to you? And you know, I was just such a missionary. I said, well, I'm converted to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I wanted to tell her everything and gave her a Book of Mormon and everything. So I was really into that. Any friend I met, I was telling them about that. And that's the thing. So when I did my work in my break time, I took a Book of Mormon and I was in the park and was reading, and then I was talking to people, and then I always gave them my book. So I don't know how it came. I was such a missionary. I was like, it always came that I talked to people and then said, oh, you can have my book. It's really good. And then I had to get another book for me, and I always gave away my own book. And that was the time I thought, oh, it would be so good to have the whole day time to do missionary work. So then this is what happens when you're young. So the missionaries in that time were my age, and so you have the desire to do the same. I was like, oh, it's such a miracle that I found this church, and maybe there is someone like me who's searching, and I would like to give the same opportunity to the person. And so, yeah, and I didn't feel, so I changed my life through the Mormon Church, like more to be more honest, to pray more, to read more in the scriptures, and then so at work, and I had the word of wisdom, of course. That was a change. I mean, I was not someone who drank a lot, and I didn't smoke for years. I stopped that for years before. But like coffee, you know, the Mormons don't drink coffee. And in my work, I stopped making coffee. So normally, at some time, I just stood up and cooked coffee. Yeah. And then now I didn't do it because it was not good. And I didn't do it from myself. So when my colleagues said, hey, Chantal, what's about coffee? Okay, then I did it, but I didn't do it anymore from me, from my side. So sometimes when people were talking to my colleagues, I just brought some coffee. I didn't do that anymore. So crazy.
Well, giving up coffee for a German is a very, very big deal. Very big.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, and my boss, he liked black tea, but he didn't care. So I started to cook him fruit tea. And then he always said, oh, what's that? Well, so if he doesn't say exactly he wants black tea, I do a different tea. So crazy, yeah? Yeah,
it is a little crazy. You're right.
It was so, and yeah, and the other thing is, I didn't feel very comfortable in that work anymore because, yeah, it was a lot of, yeah. If you go this way, look, there was a time. I also started to do fasting. Yeah, normally you pray and fast the first Sunday or first weekend in the month. And I was so into it that I learned, okay, if you have something special you can pray for, you can fast, so you can do it not only once a month. And so I started fasting because, like, my boyfriend, he started to have. He was very quick in converting to Mormonism, but it was more, so he was more friend to the elders than a conversion. And then very quick, he had the desire, like, to drink beer. And so, and I was very, I thought, oh, I need to pray and fast for him. He loses his faith. And so I prayed and fasted in the weeks, and one day I was fasting, and we had a presentation in our office, it was a travel agency which trains agencies. Yeah, so, and there was a lady from Austria. She came and she brought some wine and she brought some delicious food, so that we have the presentation on the computers and have some wine and food. And I was fasting. So then she asked, well, who's drinking wine? And then my colleague said, Chantal and me, because we were the both who were drinking wine when we had events. And I said, no, I don't want, I just want water. And then she said, you were weird on the last time. What's wrong with you? And then not only that, I didn't drink any wine. I didn't want, no, I didn't say water, nothing. I didn't want, because I was fasting. And so I didn't eat and I didn't drink. Yeah, because it was my, I was so weird that time. Yeah. And so the relationship to my colleagues was a little bit complicated through my behavior. Yeah. Because I was so crazy. And I didn't feel comfortable. And I wanted to have more time to do missionary work. So then we had we had a family home evening once a week with a family, because I didn't have a family in the church, and my friend Ivor. So we met with a couple with no children, and we met once a week to have this family home evening, and we read the scriptures and had some food and fun. And so they said like something, a mission is a good preparation for a marriage, because you learn skills you can meet as a couple. And I thought, oh yeah, that would be great. And I said, so to my boyfriend, would you like to serve a mission? And he said, no, I'm too old. So he was already 25. And then and I asked people, is it too old to go on mission with 25? People said, no, sometimes there are older people, and even more than 25. And then I told him once, because I was so much in missionary work, I told him, what would you think if I go to a mission? Would you wait for me? And then he said, well, if you think so, okay. And then I was so excited. Oh yeah, I will serve a mission then. And but for girls, it was not necessary to serve a mission if you have a partner. So the most important thing was to get married. And so my bishop said, oh, you don't need to go to a mission. I said, but I want to. And then we had these, you could, if you needed it, you could let me give you a blessing. And then I asked one of the missionaries, I said, well, could you give me a blessing? I want to know if it's good to go to, I would like to go to serve a mission. So I want to have a blessing, what God thinks about that. And this elder gave me this blessing and said, you will be such a great missionary, and God is so thankful that you want to serve a mission. That was my blessing, yeah? And that was like, yeah, let's go. And when my bishop said, well, you don't need to, I said, well, I received the blessing and I should go. I said, well, when the blessing says so, then you should go. So then my boyfriend said, well, then I will go. I will serve a mission as well. Yeah, he was supposed to go short after me to the MTC. And then I served a mission in the Munich Bavaria mission from Hamburg mission. And my boyfriend never showed up in the MTC. So when I was gone, he had something with the girl, and he was not allowed to go on a mission anymore. And he even got excommunicated. And I didn't know about that till my first city. I was surprised I didn't get any letter. And so, but once he sent me a letter, told me what happened, and that he's very sorry, and that we would talk when I come back, and so on. Yeah, but my mission was a very, very good experience. I was very sad, of course, because we wanted to get married when I come back. So I thought he is the one, and we just give our time to God, and then we can have a happy marriage. But yeah, so that the first the first few weeks I was, a month, I was very upset, and I got a blessing as well for strength. And but I concentrated on my mission, and it was a good experience.
It sounds like it was. I almost always hear returning missionaries talk about what a good experience it was. Well, it's either an excellent experience or a horrible experience. One of the two. There's rarely one in the middle where it's like, it was okay. But I'm glad you had a good experience, even though the coming home was hard.
I was a convert. So I think it's different when you grew up in the church. But as a convert, it's something very different, because you have different experience. You have you experience more miracles, and you're more open to things, I think. I don't know. So I had a lot of miracles of doing my mission. So prayer which were answered, and so I could. But I had companions, one companion, she was not on a mission by her decision. And you could see that. So she really didn't want to work. And I was very mad. I said, well, if you don't want to work, just go home. Why are you here? Why are you wasting my time? But this is, the mission also was something to learn, really to learn, to be humble and to love, because you're 24 hours with a companion, and then you really learn skills. You need the marriage as well.
Oh yeah, I haven't thought of it like that. Being that close to someone for that long, I bet you do learn a lot of good communication and skills. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how old were you by this point when you returned from your mission?
How old was I? I think 22. Yeah, 22. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is, with my mission and Henning, yeah? So I didn't tell something about Henning.
I know, I'm so excited to hear about how you met Henning.
So Henning was a stake missionary. And I think the second discussion with the missionaries, they brought him to my house as to support the missionaries, yeah? And he was so excited about the church and everything. But I was in the beginning. It was the missionaries used to ask you in the second discussion if you not ask, but they tell you to get baptized. Yeah, will you get baptized? And they did that on the second discussion, and Henning was part of it on the day. And then they said, yeah, will you be baptized? And I said, no, I'm already baptized. And they tried to tell me about baptism for children, for babies, that it's not necessary. I said, no, I was not a baby when I was baptized. And and Henning was so excited. He said, oh, you should be baptized. It's something cool and so this and that. And I thought, who is this guy? And didn't he listen? I don't want to be baptized. So that was the first meeting with Henning. I said, I thought he's weird. But later on, something happened before my mission. So Henning went to serve his mission to New York, Rochester. And before he went on his mission, he needed to go to the temple. And I met him at the station when he was on the way to Frankfurt. And I don't remember. No, there was something happened before. Wait. So while I was a new member, Henning said one, I'm so excited. I'm going to get my patriarchal blessing. I said, and I was I wanted to know everything about the church, because I wanted to absorb everything. I said, cool, you're getting your blessing. When you come back, you need to tell me about your blessing. He said, yeah, okay, I will do that. And so weeks later, he had his blessing. Henning, by the way, had a girlfriend, and I had my boyfriend. So but when he came back from his blessing, I asked him, "Hey, Henning, you wanted to tell me about your patriarchal blessing?" And he was a little bit, a little bit uncomfortable. He said, "Well, it's very personal, but I promised to tell you about it, so I will tell you a part, not everything." I said, "Yeah, go on. And then he was telling some things about his blessings. And then he said something about the girl he would marry. And then it hit me from the top of my head through my body, and then I stopped and said, "Oh, what was that? No, it's not me." and then he said, "Why do you want to know everything?" I said, "Oh, it's enough now. It's enough." And I thought, I hope he didn't recognize that I felt this. Yeah. So that was what happened with Henning. And then before he went to the temple and I met him on the station, it was something magical as well. I said, why do I meet him now before he's going to the temple? And I was very jealous because I wanted to go to the temple too, and he's going already. And so I didn't want to meet Henning every time because that was weird. And I was with my boyfriend, and it was a weird experience. And yet now, to go back to my mission, what happened with my boyfriend, and then before the end of my mission, I was very afraid to go home. Like, oh, I'm going to talk. And then I prayed one night. It was in my very last city. I was kneeling and praying during the night while my companion was sleeping. And I talked to God. I said, "God, I trusted you, I gave you my time, and now why didn't you take care of my boyfriend? Now what am I going to do when I go home? What will happen?" And then I went to sleep, and in the middle of the night, so I just heard a voice say, "Henning Müller." I was shocked. I was like, I looked to my companion if she heard it as well, yeah. And that was something like, as well, a miracle, yeah. But it was a miracle I didn't want to know, because I thought, no, why? Why do I pray and now in the night this name? Why? So then, of course, you think it must have something to do with your future husband, but you're not really ready. Your feelings are not ready for that. And then when I came home, of course, Henning was in my city, so we were a small, we were not many members in our city going to Bremen. And the young adults, we met, we did things together, and Henning was a good friend, so I could talk very good to him, and it was so I tried to be just he didn't know about my experiences. I just wanted to let go of things, yeah. And I also talked to my former boyfriend. And he was such a liar. I tried to trust, to listen again, but then just finished it. And
Did Henning have the same sort of experiences that you did, that you found out about later?
Yeah. So one time he was with his friend. They just took their bikes with a tent and went into the woods, and his knife, adventures. So he was with his friends, and then he told me later that he he had something like a dream and just saw my eyes very close to him. So something like that. Yeah.
So what happened? Like, when did you end up getting together and getting married and all that?
It took a long time. So it was, we shared time. So we had family home evening. I invited all the young adults to the house of my parents. So I moved back to my parents before my mission because, I had an apartment and I had my furniture and everything. And then meanwhile, they had a house. And so I took my things to my parents during my mission. And after my mission, I was living there. And so, I love to cook. And I invited all the young adults, missionaries to our house. And we had home evening there. So with scripture reading and eating and singing. And we had one play the guitar. We had a good time. And and sometimes we have also something like you have in camps, yeah? So similar, not camp, but just be in a house with all the young adults and have food together, scripture readings. So we did something like that. And we also had one meeting, it's in Uelzen. It was an institute meeting, so we did a lot of scripture study, and it was very, very spiritual. And there, Hanny met his girlfriend that time. So he was not with a friend he was together during his mission. She married someone else. And then he met this girl from Hanover, and and I was totally not into Henning because I didn't have the feeling. I had these experiences, but not this feeling yet. Yeah, you know. And so I was okay with that. He met his girlfriend, and when she came to Delmenhorst, she could sleep at my place because it was not allowed to stay in one bed when they were not married. So she stayed at my place when she came from Hanover to visit Henning, and it was totally okay for me. And then my mom did something very weird, which really confused me. She told me he is not in love with this girl. I said, why do you say that? He said, he told me that he loves you. What? Why would he say that to you? And but anyway, it was out of the blue that my mom said that, because there was no need to, and I was, yeah, it was, but that made me a little bit thinking. So why would you say that? And why did I have these experiences? And maybe, I don't know. But now he has a boyfriend. That's okay with me. And then there was a time his brother died. Very young. He was just 25, 26. And I was very sorry about that. And I just went by to his house to give my condolences. It was short before Christmas. And then he said, yeah, thank you. And then he said, look, I want to show you something. And then he bought a ring. He said, I want to give it to her. That shocked me. And I was very surprised that it bothered me that he had a ring, you know? For this girl. So I was a little bit confused about my feeling, why I reacted this way. But later on, she broke up with him. And then I thought, well, now You need to find out if Henning is the right person before he gets another girlfriend. And then I just talked to God again. I said, okay, Heavenly Father, you gave me these, I had these strange experiences with Henning, but I don't have this, I don't have these feelings like if someone is in love. So if you think Henning is the right person for me, then I need to have these feelings for that. And then I prayed and I said, oh, maybe I'm a little bit locked. So help me to be open. That's a funny thing. So, and then I went to an event with young adults, and Henning couldn't come there. I was there and I really missed him. Then I just took a walk and called him. And then he said, well, I was at your house today. I said, why? You know that I'm here. Yeah, I forgot. I said, okay. And then we made a date. So when I came back, so we had a date then. And it just hit me like a hammer after my prayer. Isn't that weird? Yeah, and after this call, and then when I came back, we had our first date with my new feelings and his feelings. I don't know, it was there. So that was the time we came together then.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Okay, well, keep going forward. So you were with Henning now, and you are, I don't know how old you were at this point, and you're both members of the LDS Church. Can we move, or unless there's something you want to talk about, but can we move to a place where you started to feel like the LDS Church was not the place for you? Was it you who started to feel that way, or was it Henning? How did that work out?
Well, you know, I never thought that the church is not the right place, because for me, to get there was such a miracle that I thought God put me on this place. But Henning served his mission in the States, so his English was very good. He got to read all these books about history, and so he knew a lot more than me about the reality in the church. But I never listened to that because I was very busy, and I had a lot of callings in the church. So when I came back from my mission, I had a calling in the State Young Woman Presidency, and was very busy with that. And after Henning and I came together, the stake started a little branch in Delmenhorst in our city, and Henning was the branch president, but he had no counselors, so we were very few people, and a lot of work and responsibility was on Henning and me and the few people who came, and there were a few people who were willing to do something. Yeah, and Henning had just this, you know, the gospel taught in the LDS is to be perfect, you know? You need to be perfect like Christ is perfect. And he started to feel very uncomfortable with that because, I mean, he had a lot of responsibility and didn't feel like he's fulfilling everything, you know, and so he had a great, great problem with guilt, not doing everything and having weaknesses, and it was a burden for him. And but I was the happy girl, always seeing the positive in the church and having all positive experiences, and yeah, but I didn't really see the burden he had, yeah, and he tried to get out of it somehow. then we had our first boy, Samuel. That was also, before Samuel came, it was also a miracle happened to us. So we were married, but we didn't have a child yet. So it took time, and we thought we wouldn't get children, and Henry had to take some medication for a time, and he said, no, it's enough, because And then one day there was a high priest visiting us in Delmenhorst, and he asked Henning if he should give him a blessing. And then Henning said, yeah. And then Henning came home and said, he wrote his journal and said, I want to read you, to read something to you. And this blessing said, you will have a boy and you should name him Samuel. And I was like, oh, wow. How could he say something like that? And then I was waiting. I was like, let's see. Then I got pregnant, and still I was not very faithful. I was like, 50-50 chance. What is if it's a girl? But it was a boy then. And that was something like a miracle as well, again. So we named him Samuel. Yeah, but still, the guilt was there, the work, hard work was there, not enough people to help. And then, so also when I was, I didn't go to work anymore, it was Henning was studying. And when I had the baby, his study meant to go to Costa Rica for 1 year. It was he studied global management, international studies of global management. And we planned that I would go with him and work as a nurse. So meanwhile, after my mission, I started to work. I was a trainee as a nurse, and finished my education as a nurse. So so it was not possible for him to go to Costa Rica then, and he started to search for a work, because I wasn't working full time anymore. I wanted to be there for the child, because at the moment when you have a child you stay at home. And that was a tough time. Maybe Henning can tell his story when himself, the time he went through. But it came that we had to move to Frankfurt. He had a great job opportunity there, that he could care for the family, his work. And when we moved to Frankfurt, I think this is the time Henning started to emancipate himself more and more from the teachings of the LDS Church. And when Dominic was born, was the time he wanted to break out. And he searched for help in the free church, had meetings there, but still said, okay, you can go on to church, and the children can go up in the church. And if they want, they can serve a mission, but for me, it's not the right thing anymore. And that was a time for me which was very hard, because I thought, well, we were supposed to be an eternal family, we were sealed in the temple, and now he's leading the way. And it was a very tough time for me, and I didn't understand him, just went on the way I was taught all the years and the mindset I had. The thing is, in the mindset of the Mormon Church, is when someone leaves the church, then it's because of his not obedient enough, or he has issues with things, and this is the mindset which is not healthy for a relationship. You know, you think you married a different person, and now he's leaving the way, and you just start to see mistakes. You know, you start to look to your partner in a different way. And I think, that was a tough time. But what helped us is that we both love Jesus Christ, and he was like a fundament for our faith. And that always helped us to get back to each other, you know. So there were times like when you're in the church, you get these teachings, how a family should be, and you always search for the mistakes in your spouse because you're in the church, yeah, and he's not there, and he's going a different way. And so there were thoughts like divorce, and it's easier to have the same goals than different goals, and the children have one direction and not different directions. And but yeah, we overcame these things. But during that time, I felt very uncomfortable and alone. We were living in Frankfurt, and I left my work in Bremen. But I still had the contract. So because of the children, I said, so I take a break. I'm still signed in. And whenever I want, I can come back. And now I felt so lonely there in Frankfurt and missed my friends and my family. And because, in the church, you have the Sundays, you have the visiting teacher, who are nice, but I felt very, very lonely there. And then I had friends outside of the church, but I felt spiritually lonely. My purpose, what is my purpose? And I always like to be independent. I don't like to be dependent on someone or something. And we wanted to buy an apartment, and we're looking for an apartment in the area of Frankfurt, and they were so expensive. But our relationship was not very healthy, and I felt like, why should I buy an apartment here in the outback? Because in the outback it's cheaper than in the city, and no friends here, and the relationship is not really healthy. No, I don't want to buy an apartment here. I go back to Northern Germany, go back to work, and buy a house in Northern Germany, close to my parents and my friends and my work. So I made just this decision for myself, and I told Henry, so I don't want to buy this apartment here because it's a crazy household. So in an apartment with many, there are living many different people, and you have to get along with the people. So if something needs to be done in the house, you meet and get the permission. And I said, oh, I don't want this because this is so expensive and you're not independent. And in Northern Germany, you get a house for that, and even cheaper. And you have your work clothes, you have family clothes, and your friends clothes. So, and my relationship was not very healthy. And so I said, no, I don't want this apartment. I'm looking for a house in Northern Germany, and my mom is going to take care of the children. I go back to Northern Germany. And then Henning said, well, okay. And then I come with you. So he was really very patient, yeah. And so we searched for a house in Northern Germany. I talked to my dog. I said, oh, I want to come back. I would start to work full at the beginning, just to come back into the subject and the thing, because I was out for many years. And then, I started. We found a house. My mom took care for my boys, and I went back to work. But it didn't work out because my mom is. She had my niece as well sometimes, but my mom was sleeping a lot, and the children were just all over the place and doing whatever they wanted. There was no really care for them. And then I said, oh no, this doesn't work. And then I searched for someone to care for my children, to pay. I had to pay for the person. And the house we bought was far from my work. I had a long distance to go. And Henning still stayed in Frankfurt. So he was looking for a job in Hamburg. And then he got it. But he had to, it was also very far for him to get there. So it was just a crazy idea to get there, to do this piece. The house was good, but the circumstances were very crazy. The job I had, I love to go back to my work, but my younger son, he got sick so often, and I really felt bad to bring him to the daycare and caring for other people while my son was sick. And then I took vacation for, you get some free time when your kid is sick. But this time was, I took them all because he was sick so often. So I really didn't have any vacation for the sick kid anymore. It was all plenty. And then I really, really felt bad. My job was tough. There was always a lot to do. And I brought the kids like in the morning to the daycare while they were sleeping, and then came back late, and then so I really didn't have much time for them, and it didn't feel good for me. It didn't work out to work in the north, and for Henning, he went back to Frankfurt, worked for Nestle, and then for a year, and then he had to find something else. So we had to move to Munich. And when we moved to Munich, there was a time he came back to church with us because it was a different ward, but then he left again. And then I was still fighting him to come back, and just brought him to the he went out of the church in North Germany. He was he resigned from the church, and when we were back in Munich, I really got him this back, but he got baptized again. And then there was a change of the leadership. And he left the church again, and I felt I could see that it was not okay the way they treated him, and was really with him. And we had a good relationship. And so we tried to find something comfortable for all of us. So when we moved from the northern part of Munich, also in outback to North Munich, we tried to find a congregation we all would like. So Henning found a free church with families, and we visited them, and it felt good. So it was a nice congregation. And the children went with them to Pentecost, had spiritual experiences, but still free church people hate Mormons, of course. And so like Samuel, he was very open to talk about things, said, well, he talked about the church, and they, yeah. So I was not against the church. I just wanted to have my family together in Christ. I didn't care which church, just that we all are together and practice our faith in God, and Christ is still our fundament. And so, but I had nothing against the LDS church. So, but I didn't like when someone talked bad, you know, about the church. And we thought about joining this congregation, but then we realized something was missing for us. And then Henning saw on the homepage that there was a Community of Christ in Augsburg. And I started, so when we went together to this congregation, Free Church congregation, then Henning stopped going and I was alone going to this congregation. And then I thought, well, if I'm the only person to go, then I can go back to the Mormon church, yeah? If I'm alone anyway, because I don't have anything against it. So I went back to the Mormon church, and Henning asked me, well, there is a congregation, Community of Christ congregation in Augsburg, I would like to visit. I said, what is it? And he said, yeah, it's the church which went with Emma. So it's a restoration tradition church. And I said, oh, yeah, interesting. I would like to come with you. So we visited. And it was so nice with Petra and Horst and Anita. They were all so nice people, and I was so surprised. The talk was it touched me, and even the communion was similar. Like, so the blessing is similar, like I was used to. But they didn't meet very often, so we were there once, and then sometime, and then I went back to the Mormon church. I had my callings, so when we moved to Munich, first was primary president, then I was relief society teacher, and once. That was a funny thing. They asked me if I would like to teach institute for the young adult, and that is a stay calling, and they wanted to talk to my husband if he's okay with it, but they never did, yeah? Because that was the thing also. So Henning was very open to communicate, but he had his blog talking openly about things. So, yeah, people were afraid to get in touch to him, I think. I don't know. Finally, I had this calling as a institute teacher, but they never talked to him. I talked to him. I'm going to have this calling. Yeah, so I had my callings, went to the church regularly, alone, sometimes with a boy. So the boys, I forced them to come until they were 14. And after 14, they could decide what to do. Then Horst, from time to time, just invited Henning, said, well, we'll meet again, if you'd like to come. Then Henning said, oh, we're meeting again, would you like to come to Augsburg again? I said, yeah, why not? And for that, I didn't go to the Mormon church. I went to Augsburg then with him. So this was, I don't know which year it started. And then there was the time I was diagnosed cancer, breast cancer. It was at the beginning of 2015. I just started a new job in a surgery for in a gynecology, and they had all breast cancer people, all kinds of things. I started to work in this competence center for this issue and got cancer myself. It was just odd. And my colleagues said, yeah, you should do it here because we are really fast. You have you're working with this and this professor and you're really in good hands here. And so I did. And they wanted to put me into a study for the treatment. And for this, I was not supposed to meet many people because of infection. And so I said in the church, so I would be able to teach institute anymore and come to church during this treatment. That was the first time in over 20 years that I didn't go to church every Sunday. And I had a lot of time to think. And it was a shock, of course, that I had cancer. So I had to find my way and had a lot of work to take walks outside. So from the moment I was diagnosed, I didn't need to go to work anymore. Normally, when you work as a secretary or something, you can still go to work. But in my case, my colleague said, no, this is a trauma. You don't need to come here and see what happens to people who have this. Yeah. So the doctor said, I don't need to go to work. And I had a lot of time to think and ponder and to read. In that time, I started to read a letter to a CS director from Jeremy Reynolds. So Henning and Guido were translating that into German. And that was very easy for me then. So I'm very lazy. And so it's easy for me to read it in German. And so the thing is, in that year in Institute, we started to read in Doctrine and Covenant and Pearl of Great Price. And I was afraid to teach that because I had some issues with that. So I was glad I didn't need to go to do it anyway. So. And then I read this letter and many things Henning always told me just hit me, and I understood what he meant all the years. You know, the thing is that as an active woman, you don't like to hear critic things about church. You always try to rationalize and to defend it. This is what I was all the years, and now I was just open and just saw mistakes. And some time before my diagnosis, also which helped me to get a better relationship to Henning was the podcast of John DeLynn. So he had this podcast on stayLDS.org. And this is something I could do because it says stay LDS, you know? I said, okay, you can listen to that. And then I heard all these stories about honest people who experienced things which were not okay, but they still wanted to stay LDS, you know? And I could see Henning in that, how he was treated and how he was struggling. So I listened to podcasts during the time I had time. So there were, meanwhile, it was called Mormon Stories, let's say LDS. Mormon Stories podcast. And I listened to a lot of stories and I just was surprised. How crazy this system is. But still, I tried to go to church. Sometimes I said, I thought, oh, maybe I just can go to sacrament meeting, because my mindset was, we need to go to church on Sunday. I missed that. And so I went just to sacrament, and then it was in the beginning of the year. It was the time people had cold, you know, and I was really in danger. And I didn't want to touch anyone. And so, but when you come there, they come and want to hug you, and they sleep. And I was like, oh no, I can't go back there. And but from time to time, I went with Penny to Augsburg, to Community of Christ. So somehow started to go regularly when they met. And then there was this time in April when Richard James visited Augsburg. Horst called Henning and said, well, we have Apostle Richard James coming to Augsburg, and I wonder if Chantal would like to have a blessing. And that was a big deal for us, an apostle coming to our house and offer a blessing. That was, wow, that's neat. Said, yeah, she would love to. So he talked to me and said, yeah, wow, cool. And so Richard, Larry McGuire, and then they came and we talked. We had food together, we shared stories, and then Richard asked me if Jesus Christ would be here, what would you like him to do for you? This question hit me. I thought, wow, it's awesome that an apostle, he's interested in what Christ would do. And that's for me how I see a witness of Christ, yeah? Just to have the desire to do his will. And I had my thinkings in my heart about that. And but I said, I mean, I my desire was always that my family is strong in Christ, and Christ is an important role model in our household. And so he gave me, horse anointed with oil, and then I received this blessing, and it was very touching and very unique for me. And that was a this day was a changing of my strong belief that God has put me into the LDS Church. Because it came to my mind that if I would ask today which church pleases me most, for me the answer would be Community of Christ. And so that was the day of change. And that day I thought, today is the day, this was my baptism day into the LDS Church when Richard came to my house. And so anyhow, I thought that this is a sign that I changed my mind, that God has another place for me in spirituality. Yeah, so I had my chemotherapy, and at the end of the therapy, I was talking to a friend. We were in therapy together. We talked about what's coming next and what is our believing. And so I told her about him, that he wants to join the Community of Christ. I told her how much I like Community of Christ as well, and I said, I think I want to join as well. And so we both joined, were confirmed in the Community of Christ in September 2015. Yeah.
I can't remember when you were confirmed either. I don't know if I was still in Europe at that time. I left Europe in September 2016. I don't remember if it happened. Yeah. So it's a beautiful story, Chantal. It's really beautiful. And what a difficult transition for you, time. Like, have with the diagnosis of cancer and with leaving the LDS Church and joining a different church. That's a huge Those are a lot of huge transitions for you.
Yeah.
So now you and Henning are both members of Community of Christ. And was there an ordination in there somewhere for you?
Yeah. So in that time when I joined Community of Christ, I had my surgery. So you get chemotherapy and then you get the surgery because the cancer shall be smaller. But in my case, it grew again. And I had the surgery and then I had a second cancer, a different. And I needed to get a treatment again. Chemotherapy again. So by the in December, did I start in December? I started in the beginning of 2016. Yeah, I started with a new treatment of chemotherapy, and that was as a member of Community of Christ, and people were praying for me and were very nice and kind, and I was shocked that I had to go through a chemotherapy again. My hair was just growing, and then again, but it was a different chemo. They said I wouldn't lose all the hair again, but that's not that important. But during that time of my second chemo, I didn't know if I how long I will live. I said, I thought, I mean, for some people, this cancer I had was very aggressive, and I didn't know how long I will live. So it was just living from day to day and just don't know what comes next. And then Joey told me the possibility to do seminary. Yeah, and this was something that was so like a tender mercy to me. So like, it's, this option is there. Maybe God will give me the chance to live and to do something on this earth. It was very hopeful. That gave me a lot of hope. It's I tried to do all the paperwork for it, and then there was also the World Conference in 2016. It was something I said, "Wow, I would like to be at a World Conference and to experience that. Maybe it's the only time in my life I can do that." And so I, Joey and Richard said that we could come as, so for the Western Europe mission, we could come as delegates. And I talked to my doctor. So I finished my chemotherapy, and then I had to do the radiotherapy. And then I made an appointment for the radiotherapy, and she asked me if I have any plans this year, and I said, yeah, I would like to be, I would like to go to the World Conference for the church in May. And she said, oh, we could make it if we start then and then, and you can have, at the end, you can have double chemotherapy. You can have it in the morning and in the evening, and then you can make it to this appointment. I said, really? She said, yeah, we can do that. So my doctors were all great. So whatever I had the desire to do, like going sailing with the sailing rebels, I could interrupt my chemotherapy and go and do that. Or in winter, in the break, 3 weeks break, I could go to Egypt. the doctors were also kind, helping me to have the desire to live and to do whatever I would like to do. That was really unique. And so they made it possible that I could go to World Conference. So I finished my radiotherapy in the morning, and then went to the airport to come to World Conference the same day with Henning. Yeah. And during World Conference, I was introduced to Matt Frizzell, the dean of Graceland, the dean of seminary. Yeah. And we were talking about for me, the possibility for me to start a seminary, and I it worked. I started to do it, and so Richard also came to Munich, and he started a group with us, a Munich group. So we had our house church with some people, and then later on, so Horst helped us when we wanted to have communion, and then we were ordained as priests. We had the preparation before with Array online preparation, and Array also came and visited, and we were ordained as priests. And started our house church. And something very, very unique as well is that I had the chance to baptize someone in our small house church. So she was in the LDS church, and she left the church as well during time out through sickness, and realized for herself that it was not. She had many issues, and because of a friend of her who was in our house church, he came to visit her, and she told him, "Well, you're so happy. What happened?" And then he told her about her meeting at our house church. We had a wonderful meeting with Leandro and John Hamer. He gave a presentation in Munich, and we had some visitors from Berlin. Eva came, and also a friend, a former ADS. So we had a great meeting there. So this experience, when this friend went to Hannelore and told her about his experience in our house church, she wanted to come next time. She came, and I knew her very well because, of course, you know each other in the church, in the Mormon church. And so she was very excited about the community of Christ and the teachings, and it was more related to her faith, and she really, really felt very confident. She said, "For me to join is a baptism, so I don't want just a confirmation, I want to be baptized, because this is the only way for me to do it." So the first time I was not really, it was not really me, but now it's me who wants to make a covenant with Christ in this church. So she wanted to be baptized, so she wanted me to baptize her, and it was a great honor. So to be a priest, and I mean it's a big deal as a former Mormon to have the priesthood, and then to have the opportunity to baptize someone. That's great.
I mean, what a journey you've been on, Chantal, from Rwanda to Germany to Catholic school to becoming a member of the LDS Church, to becoming a member of Community of Christ, and then becoming a priest in Community of Christ and doing baptisms and leading a house church. What an awesome and interesting life you've led so far. And I'm sure that there's so much more that will come. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing your story with us. I know it's not always easy to talk about that, those some kinds of things like this, but I appreciate you being so open and vulnerable to do it. Is there something else you want to say before we sign off?
One thing I was thinking about is the transition in my spiritual practice. So, and what I learned from the Second World Conference this year for my house church and also for my spirituality is that I just listened to the podcast of Larry with Robin yesterday or the day before. And so my friend Tanya I'm here with, we started doing yoga and qigong at the Feldmaringer lake. And this is a spiritual practice for me as well. So just so church doesn't need to be something doing in a house church or in a church. It's being with friends on a lake and doing yoga, like Larry said, and or qigong. And I'm very thankful for this new mindset. And I hope that we can do it next year again regularly. So right now, Tanya is very handicapped because she broke her knee. But this is something new for me, a different spiritual practice, not only in church, but good conversations and yoga practice, and meditation.
I think that is super, super important. And I am a big proponent of spiritual practices. I think it's really the only way that we're going to understand where God is calling us. So that's awesome. I love hearing that. Well, gosh, thank you again for saying yes to this podcast and for saying yes to telling us your story, Chantal. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. And yeah, that is, it is just my, that I could tell my story.
Absolutely. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.